Jed is, you know, someone who's extremely progressive, forward-thinking, honest with himself about the organization. And he's always been at the forefront of our attempts to change and to modernize. So Cubs are getting the benefit of fresh eyes, so to speak.
President of Baseball Operations for the Chicago Cubs, Jed Hoyer.
My job is, you know, to do what I think is the right thing for, you know, the health of this franchise. And, you know, I want to make sure that we can build, you know, that next great Cubs team.
One of the architects of the 2016 World Series champions, Chicago Cubs.
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series.
Jed Hoyer, building and talking Chicago Cubs baseball with Mully and Haw.
Because I have utmost trust in those guys, starting with Jed, of course, from the top.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And now joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is Jed Hoyer, CircaLasVegas.com. Jed, good morning. Happy opening day. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
Well, we're fired up. It's opening day, and we're making all our projections, and we've got very, very high ambitions for you guys. I'm sure you do, too. When you look at how things went, at how things are going, how do you feel to start this season?
Good. You know, I think that the longer I do this, the more I feel like, you know, spring training is spring training. You know, I think we don't talk about, you know, like NFL preseason or NBA preseason the same way we talk about, you know, spring training. We talk about stats a lot and how guys are looking, which is probably not ideal. And the more I do this, I feel like what I really try to focus on is the health of the team and, right, you know, our guys sort of getting to the starting blocks, you know, in the right way. And I feel really good about that. I thought that, you know, Craig and the coaching staff and the training staff did a great job this spring. And I think we're starting out in a good position.
You know, Jed, when you look at the depth of your starting pitching, you go back and you look at the minor leagues and some of the guys who might contribute to the major league team this year. We just talked to Bruce Levine, for instance, and he thinks the story of the season is going to be how your young arms in your system will contribute to the major league team in contention, ideally. I just wondered, do you agree with that? Are you looking for that to happen? And was that a contributing factor to why maybe you weren't involved with the pursuit of Jordan Montgomery?
Yeah. Well, I'd say on the depth part, the game has changed so incredibly much. I think when you look at the way it used to be on opening day, you have your five starters and you probably hope those guys would throw 900 to 1,000 innings. And, you know, in today's world, that's just not reality. You know, there's a lot more injuries. There's a lot more short starts. You know, you're going to get down to starter 8, 9, 10, 11 for sure. And so knowing that, I think the depth of your pitching is just so critically important. You know, if you don't have real pitching depth in today's game, you're really just hoping you get lucky with injuries and avoid them, because almost every team is going to face what I just said. And I think given that, I feel really good going into it. It's something we didn't have for a long time. I think we've built it up and I think we're proud of it. And I think it will help us at some point this season. And, you know, when it does, it's not going to be a great moment, to be candid. You know, we're going to have an injury that's going to force us to do that, or we're going to have someone that's not performing, but that's inevitable. That's the nature of baseball in 2024. And we have to be prepared for that. And I think we do have the young pitching to withstand that.
I'm curious, when you are putting your team together, there's an old adage in the NFL, which is it's the general manager's, it's the coach's job to win in the right now. It's the general manager's job to protect the franchise from the coach. And I think that applies in all sports. And certainly we see it in baseball. And the manager is all about today's game and winning in the right now. And you have to have the larger picture. So when you're looking to make moves during the season, must you keep in mind making sure you're not blocking guys if you feel you have someone on the verge? Must you kind of be aware of how one year leads to the next and the next? Do you have to approach, and obviously there's a tax issue that you got to be aware of. Do all those things come into play as you build this team?
You know, always. I mean, I think you always have sort of one eye on the present and one eye on the future. But at the same time, I do think, you know, that one of the, you know, reasons I wanted to be so aggressive when we had a chance to with Craig and to bring him on board as our manager, is he has a fantastic perspective on an entire organization. You know, that are my conversations with him, you know, he's a manager who he wants to win tonight's game and tomorrow's game just as much as anybody, but he also understands a larger picture. I think he knows that, you know, the way that, you know, the way we're going to be really good for a long time is by, you know, giving those guys chances and by not, you know, trading them all away for just a small gain right now. And so he understands that stuff really, really well. You know, he started out in the front office. I think that the way that, you know, Milwaukee as a smaller market was building teams, I think helped with that. So I think there's a natural tension that you have with any manager that's healthy, that in some ways we have different jobs, right? That his job is so focused on tonight's game and tomorrow's game. And my job is, as you said, organization building and making sure the team's healthy. So there's a natural tension there, but I think that there's a way to handle that tension that is the right way. And I feel as though when I talk to Craig, he knows my perspective. He's thought through my perspective. And I think I've done the same with him. And so I think it takes away some of that tension, which is good. But, you know, I joke about it. We haven't lost a game together yet. We haven't had, you know, those bad moments. And so we'll see how we react to them together. But I do think his perspective on the big picture is really fantastic. And I think that will help what we're trying to do, which is build something that's, you know, good every year, that, you know, our opening day conversation every year is a positive, because we know we're going to be in contention, and that's ultimately what you want to build as an organization.
So in those moments, maybe you've encountered that creative tension or natural tension, as you call it, Jed, what have you learned about Craig Council and the way that he may navigate through that in ways that he is kidded about asking maybe so many questions, maybe the wrong questions? And when you hired him, you wanted somebody to challenge you. How difficult will this manager be to manage? Have you gotten a sense of that yet? Because there could be good things about that, but it also could be different and challenging.
Well, ultimately, we're trying to be, you know, we're trying to be great. We're trying to be a great organization. And I think with that, you have to ask hard questions. And I never take offense if it's a question about, you know, why do we do this, or, you know, something about a report or a database or a decision or a process. Like, I think that's terrific that, you know, having someone who's really smart with a fresh set of eyes to ask those questions is great. And I think that if you, as a leader, I think if you shy away from those questions and aren't willing to kind of turn the lens on the things you're doing, then I think that, you know, you're not willing to get better, you know? And so I did feel that when we hired Craig, I thought to myself that, you know, I was doing something that was uncomfortable, that they would get a comfortable situation before. And it was going to be something that I thought it was going to be great, but also thought it would be challenging, and he would ask hard questions and he would push us. And that's what he's done. I think that's exactly what we wanted. And I think in the long run, we'll all be better for it.
I was fascinated. You know, first of all, it's been a ton of fun watching spring training and seeing a lot of your young players and the Owen Caseys of the world and the Matt Shaws and all these guys. Just getting a chance to get eyeballs on them is tons of fun. And you imagine when they're coming up and what they're going to do. But then, like, Jim Callis wrote about the farm system and lauded it and said that it compared favorably to the group that you guys put together en route to that World Series, because you had better pitching than you did then. You had more balance with guys coming up. That's a wonderful thing to have. But as we all know, there's a difference between prospects and then the actual payoff of it and the use of them, as you guys did to get to that World Series, to get other people in here, et cetera. Are you at that point yet, or are you a year or two away from that?
You know, I think we're a little bit away. I mean, when I think about 2016, like that season, right, by that point, you know, during 15, we had broken in, you know, Addison had come up and played, and obviously Chris was the, you know, was the rookie of the year. And it felt like those guys were a little bit more established. Like, as we started that season, those guys, you kind of knew what those guys were. I feel like 15 was the year where we started the season and didn't know, you know, exactly what those guys would be. You know, Chris could have come up and struggled. Addison started the year in the minors. And so we didn't have a great feel for it. And, you know, one of the things that really does excite me about the year, and I agree with you on spring training, is it does excite me that, you know, when we have the inevitable injuries or poor performance or whatever happens, we're going to be calling on a really talented young player to come up and help us. And I think that is you know, that's exciting. You know, that it may not be right away in April, but like as the summer goes on, I think we'll be infusing that next group onto the team, and that's really fun for us. It's fun for fans, and I think it's real depth. You're not relying on minor league free agents. You're not relying on older players to just, you know, just be replacement level. You're bringing up guys that have a chance to have a real impact. I'll also say one of the things that Craig has said that I have loved is that, you know, the expectation has to be that guys will struggle. And, you know, that's the expectation with young players. And you have to be willing to go through some of those moments of pain. You know, the Chris Bryants of the world, like, that is the absolute exception. He came up here, he never struggled. You know, he's kind of rookie of the year, MVP. Like, those things don't happen. You have to expect that, you know, Rizzo's path is probably more revealing, where he came up in San Diego was awful. And you know, we benefited by their mistake trading him to us. But I think you have to expect some struggles and some difficulties. But I think if you're willing to go through that, I know these guys are very talented and I know they're going to have a huge impact on the Cubs for a long time.
So in that context, what's the right way to view Michael Busch this year? In spring training, you watch him and you wonder, boy, can that swing translate into the regular season? And boy, can those numbers as a PCL MVP translate into the majors? What have you seen to make you confident that he can be the guy who's going to keep that job?
Well, yeah, he has a great way about him. I think he fits in exceptionally well with our group. I do think he's a little bit older. You know, I think that, you know, he was a college guy. COVID slowed him up a year, you know, after he got drafted, and then obviously he was with the Dodgers. And so I think with most organizations, he would have been thrown up to the big leagues, you know, sometime early last season. Instead, he spent the full season last year dominating in the minors. So I do think he's, in some ways, I would say almost over ready, you know, that he's been waiting for this opportunity. I thought he looked really good this spring. I think he's going to continue to get better and better at first. And I do love the way he takes his at-bats, that they're patient. He really knows his strike zone. And I think that, you know, by just going up there and having quality at bats, I think he's going to fit in really well and perform really well.
Do you guys, I mean, I'm sure you see what the projections are for your team that are out there. Do you have internal projections that where you think, well, we're going to do better than that, or that's very optimistic? I mean, how do you balance what people expect from you versus what you expect?
Well, a couple of things. I actually think it's really valuable third parties. It is valuable because I think that every team in baseball, 30 for 30, probably has rosier projections on themselves than other people. And I think if you didn't have any third parties to evaluate your farm system or to evaluate your team, I think you'd be in a lot of trouble, you know, because I think it would be, everyone would have rose colored glasses on. So, you know, I look at the projections. I think you can take a lot from them. I always say the same thing, which is it's our job to beat those projections. You know, last year, I think we were optimistic and we beat our projections by quite a bit. You know, it wasn't quite enough. We needed a couple more games last year, but we certainly beat the projections. And that's the goal going in, is that we have to, you know, as a group, we have to, you know, work all summer to try to beat all the projections. And it's going to be a tough division. I mean, there's no question that you've got, you know, five teams that can compete. You've got five teams that have a ton of young controllable talent. And I look at this division, I think, you know, right now, it's a flat division, but it's not considered a great division. I think you're going to look up in 2 or 3 years and it's going to be a division with five really good teams, really talented teams, and it's going to be viewed very differently, I think, in the industry. So, we have real competition with teams that are really talented around us, and we have to go out there and we have to beat our projections.
I want to go back to the rotation for a moment. So Jameson Taillon's back injury, which could delay his start to the season, maybe the end of April, who knows when, but it could linger as well. Got to protect yourself against that, Jed. I just wonder, could you explain the thought process in not necessarily going after, maybe you did and we weren't aware of it, but a guy like Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, there were other veterans out there that might have been stopgaps, maybe supplements to this rotation in case Jameson Taillon's injury lingers longer than you would like?
Yeah, no question. I mean, obviously those are things that I think every team probably talked about, because it became clear those teams, those players were going to get shorter deals, and that was going to be similar to what happened with, you know, with Cody or with Matt Chapman. You know, candidly, you know, when there was a situation, I guess it was late February, where there was those four guys were out there plus a couple other free agents. And, you know, we knew we had the, you know, kind of financially we could go after one of those guys and be aggressive to get one of those guys and push. And, you know, Cody for us was the best fit, you know, candidly. We felt like, you know, what he brought to our team, we knew him. He could play center. He could play first. You know, he could play corner outfield if we needed him to. We felt like we needed a left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup, all those different things. We felt like of all those guys, he was the right guy for us to pursue. And so that was our decision, was to go after him. You know, I think by the time, you know, after that, we were not able to go after those guys. And certainly, you know, you can never have enough pitching. And I think that, you know, the Giants and Diamondbacks got really good pitchers, but obviously that was something that we decided before that Cody was the right fit. And, you know, we're really excited we have him back.
When we talk about the young guys and how they're playing and you know, it's great that you have cover if something goes awry, but every once in a while you got a guy that will play so well that you got to find a spot for him. How do you handle that? Is that the ideal situation, or does that become a problem? And, you know, I'm thinking of Morrell last year, did very well and came up and managed to do that. Do you feel like you have surprises like that in the offing?
I would love that. I mean, I think that,
yep.
That's the best situation you can have, where, you know, a guy just makes it really clear. You know, I think that you hope that, you know, guys kind of bang the door down and make it clear they're ready for the big leagues. And it's not just because of an injury. And if that happens, we'll figure it out. You know, I think that we know that some of these guys that are in the minors have a chance to be really good, and we want them to be part of our future. And if they decide that it has to be earlier than we thought, then we'll take that problem, you know, but I think that's ultimately what you want and you hope for. And you know, it is hard. Like, I would say that, you know, one of the challenges that we have now is, you know, the gap between AAA and the big leagues is the biggest it's ever been since I've been doing this. Just that Major League pitching is so good that it is really hard to sometimes evaluate that. And so even when a guy does that, I still think you have to anticipate the same struggles because the gap is wider. But certainly if a guy wants to just throw up crazy numbers and dominate, you know, kind of like Morrell did last year, that's a great problem, and you know, something we'll certainly look forward to if that happens.
Jed, I don't know what you guys did to alienate the schedule makers, but it's not kind early on. You look at your 22 of the first 32 games: Rangers, Dodgers, Padres, Mariners, Diamondbacks, Astros, Yankees. How will that schedule, as tough as it looks, color your perception or your interpretation of what's going on early if things may not get off to the kind of start that you want?
Well, I think you have to have the right perspective on it, that, you know, we're aware of the same thing. It's certainly, when you stare at it, you're like, oh, not a lot of breaks in that schedule. And, you know, a tough 3-city road trip on the West Coast to start. And, you know, in some ways maybe I'm trying to look at it the right way, that, you know, I think you'd rather have that early in the season. You know, it's a good test for us early, you know. And one thing I feel is sort of a danger. I look at last season, for example, right? Last year, I thought our schedule was kind of brutal out of the gate as well. And we played really well in April, and we kind of grinded. I think we were like 14-10 through that tough schedule. I think we, you know, won 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers, and we felt like we were doing, you know, doing really well. And then we went and played the Marlins, and we played the Nationals, and had this like a, you know, disaster road trip. And the first moment that we had kind of a break in our schedule, so to speak. And so it was sort of a good lesson in a lot of ways, where, you know, I just think, you know, I always say, like, if you're playing well, you can beat anyone. And if you're not playing well in this league, you know, you're going to lose to anyone. And I just, you know, ultimately, yes, it is certainly a grind of a schedule early, and we just have to win one game at a time and get through it. But I also feel like I've also seen it where you finally get a break in the schedule and everyone kind of relaxes, or you maybe have a couple injuries during that stretch, and you, next thing you know, you blew those games against poor teams. So I've seen it both ways, but yes, it is not an easy early schedule. We have to have our A game going right away, and it's going to be a really good test for everybody.
Jed, it's great catching up with you. Best of luck tonight and in the season. We're really looking forward to it.
Thanks, Jed.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Be well.
That is Jed Hoyer. Great to talk to the president.
Down in Texas, getting ready to play the Rangers. Pregame right here on The Score beginning at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, is the place to be. This is the only local broadcast, and you need to be hooked into it.
Zach Patton Rod. What is, doesn't get much better than that.
Like, does that not yell summer to you?
Yes. So I'm warmer just thinking of Zach Patton Rod.
Unbelievable. Great stuff. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7.
You always have sort of one eye on the present and one eye on the future. But at the same time, I do think, you know, that one of the reasons I wanted to be so aggressive when we had a chance to with Craig and to bring him on board as our manager is he has a fantastic perspective on an entire organization. You know, that are my conversations with him, you know, he's a manager who he wants to win tonight's game and tomorrow's game just as much as anybody, but he also understands a larger picture.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of The Score. It's a great answer from Jed Hoyer when we talked about the difference in his job and that of Craig Counsell. And, you know, he's talked about that before, that Craig Counsell worked in the he has evaluated players. He has worked in the industry differently than just managerially. And obviously he's done great as a manager. And the idea being that he does have that perspective that we talk about, and he has used younger players, and he's not shied away from that. Well, I think when they hired him, the feeling was, well, the Cubs are now going to go out. They've shown their ambition. They're going to go out and buy all these players. The thinking wasn't, okay, now the Cubs can just get Bellinger back and be kind of done with it, because who needs Candelario? Who needs to replace Stroman? You can just.
Who needs Jordan Montgomery?
You don't need anyone because you got Craig Counsell. I'm telling you.
I know.
That is what happened as opposed to what was expected to happen.
Well, a couple things there.
They're going to bring in Shohei.
I don't. Well, that was kind of a pipe dream.
Somebody was on that train.
I know. I was definitely a passenger there. I was fine. I was a passenger. The Hope
you
train.
You were the conductor.
Okay. Choo-choo. All right. Let's take a step back, though.
Engineer Hall.
You look at when they hired Craig Counsell. We said that they hired him, and he established himself as one of the best managers in the game by doing more with less.
Yes.
And I said that now it's going to be fun to see him do more with more.
Yes.
And there was the assumption that the Cubs would, you know, go out and start spending. And there may be this perception that might be inaccurate that they haven't done that. But I also want to look at, and be fair, look at the payroll. So I asked Jed about staying away from Jordan Montgomery, from Blake Snell, from a veteran, because you need protection against the injury to a Jameson Taillon, perhaps. And he said they wanted one of the Boras four, and they figured they could afford Cody Bellinger, but he didn't necessarily say that they couldn't afford the others, but that was the implication, right?
Yes, it was.
The Cubs still have a $222 million payroll.
Mm-hmm.
The tax threshold is $237. If you sign a guy like Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, Matt Chapman, in addition to Cody Bellinger, you're going over that. And I know it's easy to say, well, just go over that if you can go for it now. But your question reflects why they wouldn't. And it also speaks to what they're more about. They believe in this depth. We talked to Zach about it. They think they're on the verge of something special by bringing these guys up when they are ready. And so they're not going to squander money to win or to try to win before they might think they're ready. And also, when Jed told us that this feels more like 2015 than 2016, voila, that says why maybe they weren't going to go out and overspend on a free agent pitcher in his 30s.
It's a very interesting comment that he made there. And let's not forget that, you know, their top prospect right now, their number one prospect is in Iowa, and that's Pete Crow Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
So Pete Crow Armstrong could prove in Iowa that his bat is improved. Now, what Jed talked about with the difference between AAA and major league pitching being more pronounced than it's ever been before, that speaks very loudly as to what you're looking at and for in Iowa this year, right?
Yes.
So if you're talking about Ben Brown or Cade Horton being ready to come up, they should be dominating in Iowa if to be major league ready.
It also makes you more hesitant for guys like PCA and Alex Canario.
Yes.
Because if that is true, what he said, then you want to be very cautious and deliberate more than maybe getting ahead of the game or being too hasty in those decisions. It also makes me feel like, and some texters I'm sure will think that we're being bamboozled here to some degree, but I understand where he's coming from. And as much as I was on this idea, go out and spend to get, if you're going to overspend on a free agent and you might need a veteran pitcher in your rotation, I get where they're coming from. It's a defensible position.
Yes.
Because of the depth of the rotation with young pitchers in the system. So I think you want to let it play out. You want to wait and see. They've got their manager that is supposed to win games that maybe other managers wouldn't because of the buttons he pushes. You've got talent in the pipeline. You've got a really good major league roster. You're the favorites in the division for a reason. So let's see it play out and not get over, don't overreact to them not getting a guy who may or may not have helped you put you over the top.
But I think the difference between them and the Dodgers or Atlanta or one of these teams that has done a better job of loading up is that they need everybody to – okay, we look at the Major League roster. We know where the holes are. We know who needs to play well and who doesn't. It's almost like they need everyone to be as good as they think they can be in order to top out mm-hmm. how many wins they get. Some of these other teams are covered better and have more and have, you know, can fill in the blanks quicker.
Well the teams that are pennant contenders are.
Yes.
The teams that are like the Dodgers and the Braves and the Phillies.
They're just going to do whatever they want.
They're going to do whatever they want. The Cubs may look at it this year specifically, and this is we're opening day of 2024. We're not looking That's ahead right. at 2025, and that was clear from what he's just said. Win the division. And in that division, in that context, winnable. they're ahead. It's winnable. They're spending more than teams in the division. They're ahead of the Brewers. They're ahead of the Cardinals. They're ahead of the Reds and the Pirates. So I think this is a position that they're in. So it's all
very – they're not like a mile ahead of them. You know what I mean? You get to the end of the season and you lose a series badly, and all of a sudden you're out of the playoffs last year. The same thing could happen.
Did he sound like a guy that expected to be a mile ahead of everyone in the division? No.
He sounded like a guy who knew he was in competition.
Who had a two-step lead.
But he could win it.
And they have enough to last to win that race, but they don't want to overdo it because there will be a time
when they
to
will
maybe,
have more.
Yeah, to yes. go over the tax, if you will, to do what they need to do to maybe overdo it. But it didn't sound like this was that season. It would be curious to see.
I agree.
At the deadline, if that changes.
Yeah, I agree.
At the deadline, if they're willing to be more aggressive, and maybe that's why they didn't go after Montgomery, didn't go after Snell, or didn't add Chapman, because they feel like, all right, let's see what we got. Let's give Morel and Bush a chance to prove that we're right about this assessment evaluation. And then if we're close, all right, now we got the money to do it.
With their system, they can do anything they want to do.
They have that flexibility. It's a luxury. Not the luxury tax. It's a luxury to have that kind of flexibility to adjust and adapt as you see fit. And also, Molly, let's face it, it's a very healthy organization. Sportico came out with their valuations. You know how Forbes does every year.
Yeah.
The Cubs are the fourth most valuable franchise in Major League Baseball, according to Sportico, at $5.3 billion.
So Dodgers, Yankees, Mets?
Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, Cubs.
Red Sox. Okay.
Then Giants, Braves, Astros, Phillies, Mets.
Okay.
Wow. Mets are ninth.
So that's the top 10.
Cardinals round out the top 10.
And where do the White Sox fit?
I have to look at more of that because they're not listed here.
30th.
Oh, the Nashville White Sox. I think they're 30th.
He's being mean. Although, you know, I got to tell you, when Mark from South Bend called and said that he wasn't going to be a Sox fan as long as Jerry was there, mm-hmm. I wanted to follow that up and just ask him, you know, is it because he showed up at the mayor's office in Nashville? Is it because he did that interview? Is it because he was leathered up in Springfield?
I want to know.
But I'm serious.
Yeah.
I can think of a few different reasons why this would be the tipping point. But I really want to know what was the tipping point.
And I have a serious question for you because maybe we get back to this after we get back from the break. But think about it during the break. Should Jerry Reinsdorf address the Sox fans through the Sox media today at Guaranteed Rate Field on opening day? Should he be front and center, even though he's done that before when they fired everybody? Should he do it again to address everything that's been discussed, everything that they've considered, and where this franchise really is headed? Isn't opening day the ideal time for Jerry Reinsdorf to be on the record with what the heck is going on?
Okay. My knee-jerk reaction, and I'll explain it to you after the break. My knee-jerk reaction is, God, I hope not.
Well, I'm going out there with the idea of, God, I hope so. Because yeah. I want to hear him defend all of these things and hold himself accountable in a way that he typically doesn't.
312-644-6767. Is that what you need? Do you need to hear today from Jerry Reinsdorf, Sox fans? 312-644-6767. We'll discuss it next. Mully and Haw on the screen.
I'm not going to take any questions.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Wow, I hadn't thought about Jerry addressing the media today.
Well, it's not something that's
going to
happen.
You're going out there to talk to him.
So. I'm not going out there just to talk to him. I'm just going out there because opening day.
Sure.
It's an event.
Good reason to go.
I want to hear from Pedro Grifol, Coach Griff. I want to hear from.
Oh, no, you didn't. No.
Chris Getz again. Chris Getz talked yesterday. He's unlikely to address the media again today, but we're going to talk to him at 9:25 in a
yes,
little bit.
I look forward to talking to him.
I like a lot of people at the White Sox within the organization.
And I hope he does well.
Chris Getz?
I hope he does well at his job. I have no idea.
Of course you do.
I don't know enough about, how the Birmingham project has paid off to feel that he's the right man for the job.
Well, I'll say this about Chris Getz.
God bless him.
He comes to the job and inherits a position that is going to be heavily scrutinized with a fan base that has every reason to be disenchanted and disenfranchised even. But his credentials are the kind of credentials that you could understand why a Major League Baseball team would hire him as their lead executive.
Michigan man.
Beyond that, but yeah.
Oh, that's what you're talking about.
Michigan, well, he's well-educated. He's a former player. He's been in the organization.
Michigan man.
The Sox have struggled developing talent, and he was in charge of that.
Michigan man.
Michigan man. No, they had a Michigan man in charge. That's another thing he had in common with Rick Hahn.
Michigan needs a Michigan man. Let me just say that. Bo.
Well, they don't necessarily they don't have one now.
Well, that's the problem.
They
had one.
No problem with Michigan. There's no problem
with
Michigan.
They had one, but then he had to go to the NFL and no one was interested in Chicago.
Okay, we digress. So what would you want to hear from Jerry Reinsdorf today, or why don't you want to hear from Jerry Reinsdorf today? Why would you pass up on that?
You know why? Because I think I haven't heard from him, but seeing him or reading about him in the mayor's office in Nashville, that had me frothing at the mouth. Because that's just, whether anyone wants to admit it or not.
He's trolling Sox fans.
That's what he's doing.
He's trolling Sox fans.
Showing up, leathered up down at Springfield. It's whatever. He's got his issues. He wants to do what he wants to do. I'm not complaining about that. The interviews I read with his hand-chosen, Cranes outlet, which, by the way, I was having a hard time downloading those stories, so it was upsetting. And
you need to subscribe.
I had people.
We need to pay for journalism. We're former journalists.
Yeah, I know, but we pay a lot for everything.
I know. Okay. All right.
So,
but hold on. Hold on. You can't hold that against Jerry Reinsdorf. The fact that Crane's hard to download and access.
I'm merely saying these are issues that I ran into that upset me.
Which puts you in a bad mood before you even read the story.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I like, what is Jerry going to say anything other than, don't I know where, what he's going to say and how little, there has been effectively, whether anyone wants to admit it or not, since Tony La Russa walked in the door, it's almost like you're sitting there watching this team and there's a guy kind of 4 feet from you just shooting peanut shells off your nose. You're just getting whapped in the face by some peanut shell. Where the hell did that come from? Who the hell would do that? Well, got me. I think it hit my eye. Is my eye bleeding? The shell may have cut me.
And that's what he treats. And
that's
his
how it feels.
Public portion of his role.
That's how it feels.
Yeah, I don't.
If he wants to go back to not talking, that's fine by me.
Okay, I think he has maybe responsibilities too strong, but he has an opportunity. He has an opportunity to explain to Sox fans if he truly values what they think of him or the team, and if they really want to regain the fans' trust. As Chris Guest will tell us at 9:25, if they really want to start that process, then Jerry Reinsdorf coming across in a little bit more of a humble way, expressing some humility, some credibility, some accountability would be a good way to start. Jerry, why did you meet with the Nashville mayor if you aren't serious about moving the team? Jerry, how much of your fortune will be invested in the 78 project if you proceed like the McCaskies have said they're going to devote $2 billion? What is your personal stake in this?
Would I like, David, to create a list of maybe 10 questions and like get the guy on a lie detector and just ask him those questions? Would that not be kind of an interesting thing to go through?
Absolutely.
But let me tell you something. Do you feel like you're going to go out there and ask him those questions and get serious responses from him on each and every one of them?
I would be skeptical about that. I doubt that I would, but I would still want to try.
I appreciate you wanting to do that. It sounds to me like an exercise in futility.
It kind of does, unless one of those 10 questions was, and Jerry, where did you get that leather jacket? Was that modeled after Arthur Fonzarelli? Hey.
Did Al Davis lend it to you? 312-645. We're just kidding.
That would be number 9.
Jim is in Dixon. Hey, Jim.
Morning, Jim.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Okay, so my tipping point was back at the White Flag trade. I was 43 years old, been a Sox fan for 43 years. I boxed up all my stuff as a kid and whatever in a big box, put it up in the basement. I'm getting ready to move now, so I'm going to find this box here any day. But what's changed? Yeah, we got one World Series in there, or I don't even want to say we, because I walked away then. Oh, I had some skin in the game I was a partial season, not a season ticket, but a weekend season ticket. Yeah. So I had some skin in the game in my first 43 years of life. Mm-hmm. And nothing has changed, and there's nothing.
But Jim, yes, something has changed, Jim, since the White Flag. They won a World Series.
I said that.
I know, but so.
I said that.
But that.
One World Series. In spite of him, right?
You can't do it that way. I respect your cynicism, but
the White Flag trade was awful.
It was awful.
It was awful.
It was awful.
And there is still a feeling that that team was good enough and that that team could have made noise. And, you know, again, going through so many years of just awful, bad, and honestly, like, my fear would be that if you got Jerry to talk to you, he'd tell you that his goal is obviously not to win, to finish third place and sell a little bit of hope.
Yeah, that bugs me.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that bugs everybody, right?
That would just drive you out of your head.
It explains what we're watching with the Bulls. It explains a lot of things over the last 30 years.
You know, why do you own a team then? Why you own a team? You're not in it to win it. What's
the point? To make wild profits.
Yeah, okay. Let's try Michael. He's in Lake Zurich. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Thing that bugs me about Shifty Reinsdorf, that's what I call him, Shifty Reinsdorf. When Jim Thompson gave away the bank to him and his group, you know, for Cellular One, that kind of pissed me off because we're paying for that forever.
Right.
One thing I want to know is why is Reinsdorf and his group entitled to a $500+ million payment from the Soldier Field renovation? I want to know why.
What do you mean?
They aren't due $500 million related to Soldier Field. What are you referring to?
There's a $500 million plus payment that's due to them from the Soldier Field renovation project.
There's still $500 million to be paid off for the Soldier Field renovation. Yeah. I don't think that's related to the White Sox.
I think you're talking about the amount of money that's in the
ISFA?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I don't think that
there's a virtual race before the end of this calendar year to get to that. Yeah,
between the Bears
and the White Sox. Yeah. In that vein, it was the first time I heard Kevin Warren. Thanks for the phone call. I'm sorry if we misunderstood the question. But there was a reference by Kevin Warren the other day to the White Sox and some sort of financial partnership that I didn't see coming and I didn't expect the Bears to even address. But
I got to go look that one up now. There's a lot to see. That's why I want to think about baseball. I want to go get a hot dog. I know you don't eat hot dogs. If I'm out at the ballpark, it's a fun thing to do. If they got antique taco at the ballpark, you'll find Mully lined up there. I like one of those grilled hot dogs.
How about one of those s'more shakes?
I saw that.
Campfire shake, is that what it is?
That does nothing for me.
I mean, if I'm better than a hot dog.
I got to tell you, no. If you grill one of those hot dogs, that's what you want to eat. You don't want to have.
I don't like hot dogs.
The shake doesn't do much. Then go get some antique taco. How do you not like that?
I have an antique taco. I want the campfire milkshake.
I'm not the milkshake guy.
See, they also introduced this. Let me
ask something. Just to continue this for a quarter of a second. Presumably, you've got melted marshmallow. Doesn't that wind up like on your pants or on your sleeve or some sticky arse place where you can't get it off you?
I'm not 7 years old. I'm not worried about getting a marshmallow on my sleeve.
Well,
I'm an adult and I can eat a campfire milkshake without spilling it all over myself.
I'm an ex-sports writer, and if there's mustard to be dropped, it will be on my tie.
Yes, it will. That's well.
All right, we'll be right back. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.